All right, what is up, guys? Welcome back to Late Night Shots Podcast, episode 57 today. You probably already know over here if we're in the title to this video. NCAA preseason, or whatever these are called, just came out. More than any weight class, 141 in heavyweight are probably the worst. 141, we can run through that really quickly, but then I want to hop into this. 141 has, obviously, Jaden Ironman is the one seed Big Ten champion, defeated Nick Lee in the final 6-5. The two seed is Tariq Wilson out of NC State, I think is still undefeated right now. The third seed is Dom Demas out of Oklahoma, who is, I think, still undefeated. The fourth seed is Nick Lee. Y'all know who he is. And the fifth seed is Sebastian Rivera. Where this becomes a problem, you may already be able to tell. But with Jaden Ironman, Nick Lee, and Sebastian Rivera at the top half of the bracket, only one of them will make the finals. Right?
Yep.
Best case scenario is if Lee gets moved up to three, or Lee to two and then Sebastian Rivera to three, or Lee to three is probably the most reasonable. And Seabass somehow gets booed down to six.
Yeah.
But that would cause a quarterfinal match, which it would be anyways, right? I mean, that's the only thing you can see about that. Otherwise, it's really whatever. But heavyweight. All right, let's hop right into this. So, one seed, Gable Steveson, obviously. No doubt about that. Cleared up anybody that was doubting him. Against Mason Paris, you know, clear that shit up real quickly. Two seed Matt Stenzel out of Central Michigan.
Great. I'm going to pop him right over.
Yep, good. As far as they have right now, the three seed is Colton Schultz out of Arizona State. The four seed is Gannon Gremmel out of Iowa State.
Yeah.
Dude, already looking at this, it just seems like, oh. And then the five seed is Mason Paris out of Michigan. The sixth seed is Eastern Schultz later.
Did Schultz win Pac-12?
Yep.
Sweet.
The sixth seed is Ethan Layard out of Ryder. The seventh seed, Big Tony out of Iowa. And the eighth seed, Jordan Wood out of Lehigh. Hopefully it's not too scuffed afterwards. But if you look at that top eight, no Greg Kirkfleet, no Christian Lance, no Tate Orndorff, no Trent Hilger. Those are essentially two All-Americans there, and no Luke Luffman.
Yeah.
That's all I can say right now. You know, there's obviously guys that are fighting for wild card bids out of anywhere. I think looking at the seedings, I'll tell you what I agree with. I agree with Gable at one, obviously.
Yeah.
I could agree with Stenzel at two. I'm not opposed to that, but I do think as of the time being, it should be Mason Paris.
Right.
Right, and I think anybody will say that. Either way, all that does is boost Stenzel to three. Colton Schultz, I don't want to say he's not deserving of a three seed, but he hasn't had the caliber of wins. And the caliber win of that Gannon Gremmel is getting boosted up to be moves him to that three seed, which he's not. Yes. Gannon Gremmel is not a four seed. I don't think Gannon Gremmel All-Americans, I'll be completely honest with you. That's just what I've seen from so far. I've been beyond disimpressed with this against Tony Castiope last season, Colton Schultz this season. Didn't look too great. Right. And that's just what I'll say, right? He does have a win over Zach Elam, though. That's what's boosting him up in there. So does Carter Isley from UNI. Looking at a five seed, Mason Paris. Is there really any doubt that he should be a two seed? The only valid debate is Matt Stenzel. They're 2-3 all time. Mason won three times by decision. Stenzel won twice by pin. Right. That seems like to be the only even cause for debate in this argument right now. But, you know, that's what it will be. And then the six seed, this is where it starts to get completely messed up. Ethan Laird from Ryder. Good wrestler. Solid opponent. He has a win over Jordan Wood. Wood looked injured, if I say that myself, right? He scored off of Jordan Wood's bad shot and won the duel for Ryder. I don't think he's a 6 seed. He got handled 8-2 by Matt Stenzel.
Right.
Jordan Wood, I'm pretty sure, beat Matt Stenzel. That being said, you know, Jordan Wood is the second highest returning placer, and he's an 8 seed. That should say a lot.
Right.
And then look at Cassiope right now at the 7 seed. He's just sitting there. Looking at this bracket, the most obvious prediction you can see is a Cassiope Gable final or a Stenzel Gable final. That's essentially what this looks like right now. And if we see Paris versus Gable in the semis, you know, Paris would have made the finals against Gable last year. I don't think anybody's denying that. Say if he got past
that, that's what just bugs me about like bad seeding, because now like we know what the actual best match in the tournament is, and it's not even the finals. Because even if, like, sure, Cassiope makes it to the finals, but then the question is always going to be, I mean, the fact of it is always going to be, if Paris was on the same side of the bracket, wouldn't have made it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it just kind of sucks, you know?
And that's what it is. The same thing that happened in the last NCAA tournament. It was seeded correctly. I'll be honest with you, though. They can't come at them from seeding. That's how it should have been seeded.
Yeah.
It was just a rough draw for Gable. He did.
Yeah.
Cassiope, I've talked about this already. Cassiope was the 1 seed. I don't think he makes the finals.
Yeah.
I think Stenzel takes him out.
Yeah.
Right place at the right time. We talked about this already. But even that being said, Hayden Hiley versus Jason Ulf, national finals. The year after, Hayden Hiley versus Jason Ulf, semifinals. I don't want to say controversial call. I keep trying to make this shit interesting for you guys. It's literally so hard at this point. It's like, after he majored, Mason Paris is like, all right, whatever. You can have it now. It's like,
yeah.
But, you know,
a highly null situation.
Yeah. Like,
I'm going to be honest. I'm a massive fan of Penn State, and I'm a huge fan of Jason Ulf. Highly scored. That was 2.
Possibly.
Like, I don't know, man. I mean, it's tough. And it was nice to see, you know, Jason Ulf make the finals and do his thing against Berger, but, like, shit, man. Highly scored that goddamn takedown. Now, the question
always becomes, that's what essentially lost him the Hodge Trophy, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was rooting for Bo from day one, but, like, you know, that's essentially what that is.
Yeah.
Right now, if you look at it, I was talking to somebody. What if Kirkley cuts to 97 next season?
I just don't think he can.
He's 228 in Big Tens.
Yeah, but that's a lot of – on like a frame like that, like, yeah, okay, no, a taller dude cutting weight tends to be – and I'm just going to say this anecdotally, like, from my own experience. Sometimes being a taller dude, just because you can make the weight doesn't mean you should. Last year, I'm 6 foot, 6 foot one.
Yeah, was it Darmstadt? Oh, my God. Dude, that dude
my
is different.
My freshman year, I was like 138 at like six foot.
Yeah.
Like, so just because I could make 170, my performance was a lot worse. Kirkland's been a heavyweight for so long, and he kind of loses some of that athletic advantage. Because we are talking about nationals. Let's talk about hypothetically he goes 197 and meets AJ Ferrari next year. What makes AJ Ferrari so good at 197 is that he is ludicrously fast for the weight.
Mm-hmm.
Faster than probably any heavyweight. If you think about a heavyweight's speed and then AJ's speed, right? I'm not saying like Kirk Liet does specific training to get faster. I'm saying if you took Kirk Liet, how fast he is right now, and AJ Ferrari, I'm not going to – obviously
it's, AJ it's about blow the same. Out
of water, but there's a gap.
Yeah.
There is a gap.
And you also have to think about that.
Kirk Liet's advantage at heavyweight is his frame and his speed. At 197, AJ Ferrari is perfectly built for the weight class. He's got the wingspan so that Kirkley's length isn't actually going to be a massive problem in the hand fight. And he's got the perfect style to deal with a longer, lankier wrestler, which is avoiding the hand fight, right? Because if a longer, lankier dude gets leverage on you, If a longer, lankier dude gets his hands on you, he can really pull on your head. AJ Ferrari doesn't need to get into a hand fight. He's got an incredible blast double.
Yeah.
I don't know how well that getting on your knees and crawling on all fours shit works against Kirk Vliet. Probably not. It doesn't. At all, but I would hope that AJ's got a good enough head on his shoulders that he doesn't try that with like a top.
What else does he have against top level guys?
That's he's actually got problem, an right? excellent low single, and obviously he is again, a freakishly strong human being.
Yeah, but see, he's freakishly strong for 197. He's below average for a top level heavyweight. I've seen his numbers. Like a 350 bench at most. Which is obviously incredible, but
he's got a very
Kirkley threw up
sports specific in his training. He's not big on squatting to like he's not powerlifting anytime soon, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like if we talk about barbell strength comparison to a guy like Braxton Mikesell, which might be unfair because he holds a world record.
Yeah. But, no, I'm talking about Greg Kirkley. Kirkley wins. Except for deadlift.
Yeah,
see Kirkley's wingspan, that's unmatched at heavyweight.
Kirkland's designed to deadlift, yeah.
And his deadlift isn't even a good lift, really. It's like a 550, 600.
Yeah.
His bench
press double body was always good.
Not really for at that high of a level. I mean, I'm just being completely honest. You want to push up, try to that three range. And you have to realize college athletes don't deadlift.
Yeah, and people train their whole lives for like a triple body weight deadlift.
I mean, heavyweight guys, yes. I mean, you want to be pushing up at least like 2 point. The difference between double body weight and like 2.3, 2.4 is huge, right?
Yeah, I mean, shit. Like, if you pulled off a double body weight deadlift, that'd be like massive.
A lot.
Pretty much. Yeah.
It's like second place at this point, but like.
Sorry, that's not a dig at you.
It's all good. I'm just saying. Like, for me, like, even like when I was like lighter, 405, it was so easy to get to that point.
Yeah.
Getting past that was the problem.
Yeah.
You know, if Kirkley it's Frank definitely can bench 450 pounds.
Kirkley can bench 450?
Yes.
Well, I feel humbled.
he's a world class athlete. He's a world class wrestler. He looks injured. You know, I don't want to be making excuses for him, but he was injured. He looked injured.
Well, yeah, he was. How badly was it? Because what? Since like
they it looked very bad. There is no excuse for you to lose Tony Cassiope. Tony Cassiope lost Yusuf Umeda. Record for Yusuf Umeda.
I trust Kale's judgment in that he said he would not pull. He said that he would not put Kirk Vliet in if he did not think that he could perform to his expectations. I don't know if what he said specifically was if he can win nationals. I'm pretty sure it was just if he can perform to expectations.
His expectation should have been at least a third place.
Yeah.
You know, getting majored by anybody in the country should not happen to a guy that good. Yeah. You know, not game. Like, Cassiope's good, but can't give up that ride. Like, he looks like – when I talked to him, he said he was like 240, 245. People were telling me he weighed in at 228. Multiple people.
Probably lost weight because of the recovery from whatever the injury was.
Torn ACL.
Yeah. Oh, torn. Fuck.
I mean, Mason Paris blew through him. Mason Paris is slower than him, and he has a worse build to wrestle him. The only reason he lost because he got ridden and he got blown through on his shot. And if you saw that, he didn't defend it.
He just gave
up the two.
I wish he never went for that gator roll.
That's irrelevant. What does that make it? A 10-2 match, a 9-2 match, like.
Well, so because like what I think about my thought process whenever like you play around with the what ifs of a match. Every single scoring exchange changes something, right? People talk about how wrestling is a mental game. I've had a lot of matches where like, and this is where like other stuff comes into play. But there's matches where like sometimes a dude gets scored on, and then that's what like gets him going, which is generally a sign of like a poor warm-up. Or like scoring exchanges kind of change how you wrestle for the rest of the match. Like that's why I think like if I remember right, Heidley didn't score that controversial takedown right at the end of the match. If he scored, there still would have been time for Nolth. I can't remember correctly. It might have been a buzzer beater. I could be thinking about other matches. But so if I think about that, I still would have picked Jason Nolth to ultimately pull it off just because Jason Nolth is Jason Nolth, mm-hmm. right? So whenever I think about that match and I say that I wish he didn't gator roll, if he didn't do that, because I think what happened was he got scored on and he got rattled. A dude that good probably isn't getting scored on super frequently in the practice room. Now, you should get scored on in practice. That's just my personal belief. You should always practice with people who can beat you.
Or that's not always. Exhaust yourself. But
yeah, it's not always possible. Like, my personal training situation, I just have to exhaust myself to the point where, like, there's something there.
Damn, you're right. You're shitting on your trading partners, too. It's like that.
If you're listening to this, Ragov, and I know that you might be listening to this, you're a determined kid. Keep it up. But you're a good kid. But
No, yeah, you know, I don't know.
So I think he got scored on and he got rattled. And especially whenever you try something like gator roll, that I've literally been in that exact situation. It messes you up for the rest of the match. Yeah. Now, obviously, my mental fortitude is not even comparable to Kirk Bibbs. But I feel like if he just kept it a little bit more low-key, didn't go for, like, a big move like that, then maybe he could have stayed on the feet and kept it a little bit. Because, his problem was he got ridden out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not controversial to say that Kirk Vid's kind of a freestyle dude, right? That's
100%.
Better style. He's better neutrally.
In freestyle, right? I think everything would play to his advantage. That played to his disadvantage. You know how hard it would be to gut-wrench or leg-lace to die with the frame of Kirk Vid?
I hate gut-wrenching people in general.
And I'm pretty damn sure Kirk Vid's gut-wrench is amazing for a guy that
I did see. I think U23's Jordan he did get tacked off of a trap arm.
Kerfoot? But
yeah, some Russian dude in the semis. But oh, the Russians are the best in the world at the gut wrench. And also, yeah, so Kirk
that was Sajulayev's backup dude, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that may have been. That was probably one of them.
No, that was at 110 kilos.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's his backup?
I'm assuming there's a good amount of people in Russia that could be Olympians at 97.
That's fair.
That's what you have to realize.
Yeah. So,
you know, and if we go by that, like what Gable got pinned in his junior world finals, like, you know, Mason Parrish is the perfect guy to wrestle on the international level with his attack rate,
mm-hmm.
but it will kill him in the U.S.
So, speaking of Kirk Vid's gut wrench, I actually I've been working a lot on my freestyle stuff as of late, and I'm going somewhere with this, and it's gonna come back to Kirk Vid. Which kind of a dumb decision. I got folk style in like 2 weeks, but I was working on gut wrenches with Coach Jay LaValle, and I always hated my gut wrench. I hate drilling them. I hate doing them. I hate the position as a whole on both ends of it because I suck at it. Right. But he made a point that, like, actually, people with longer arms, so, you know, me, Kirk Vid, who are both lankier people for their weight classes, it's excellent for your gut wrench because your longer arms means that you can get a tighter lock. So as opposed to, like, a shorter arm person who can maybe get a gable, if you're longer armed, you can get elbow to elbow. So, yeah, so that's why Kirk Vid is probably going to really outperform in freestyle. Just based on that, like his neutral strength and his ability to gut wrench people.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think the push out rule too is going to play a huge factor. That's why I've said it time and time again. Adam Kuhn, Nick Wazdowski, Gable Stevenson, but those three will beat Costner in a freestyle match. Listen to my reasoning behind this.
Okay,
Nick Wazdowski's a whole ass world team member, right?
Yep.
Why did Nick when did Nick Wazdowski lose that match? About 7 minutes and 30 seconds in?
Yep.
How many minutes are there in a freestyle match? 6 minutes. When has that extra minute in a folk style match ever worked against Kyle Snyder? Never.
They're saying it takes him a little bit longer to get his scores going?
No, I'm just saying his conditioning is obviously going to help him. Right. And a lot of his scoring exchanges to win matches are late in a match.
Right.
Close matches, right?
Right.
Gable,
he's not particularly suited for, like, massive comebacks. Yeah.
And you saw that against Adam Kuhn the one time he lost. Couldn't get anything going at the end of the match because he got taken down. He got taken down early. Kyven Getson got pinned early. Yeah. Jaden Cox snuck in one takedown and run him out.
Yeah.
That's the exact thing. You know, push-out rules are going to absolutely kill him against Adam Kuhn. Let's be honest now.
Yeah.
Adam Kuhn gets underhook and drives, you're going out of bounds. You know?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to beat this guy. People hate it when I say this, but Adam Kuhn is literally a bigger, faster, and stronger Kyle Snatcher. That's what he is. He's faster. I'm sorry if you don't want to admit it, but he's faster. And it's really not that close.
I'm not seeing
the main thing. It's not close. I'll be honest with you. You don't see it because 97 is just they're two different types of people you're seeing wrestling.
And he's like he kind of like
Kirk has the illusion that he's moving faster because he's so long.
He's pretty big. He's big, and I'm not saying just because he's big he's not fast, but like he kind of just lumbers and he kind of like.
Because you have to realize
Kyle
the way
is not like a dude who's like fast in the sense that say like an Austin DeSanto or like Dayton Fix was
fast. That's just more... slick. That's more Dayton timing Fix than everything.
Dayton Fix is pretty fucking speedy.
His timing is impeccable. Like when he does.
One could argue that speed in wrestling is timing. That's why John.
Yeah, but there's
Smith
a difference about. Yeah, that's timing. I'm talking about like pure athleticism-wise. Gable blows it out of the water. And I'll be honest, I don't think there's many people in the world that can match that. You know, you look at athletic wrestlers speed-wise. You know, relative, obviously. You're not going to go out and compare Gable Stevenson to RBY, who can move faster. It's all relative to the guys you're wrestling.
Sajulayev. Probably. Like, if you scaled him up to 125.
No, I mean, compare Sajulayev to 9. Okay, relative would be comparing. So, if you go relative strength, right? A relative strength at 200 would be comparing a guy weighing 200 pounds to other people that weigh 200 pounds. Pound for pound
right.
would be used to compare a guy that weighs 100 pounds and a guy who weighs 200 pounds to each other.
Yeah.
That's the difference there, right?
So, you think no one at 125 kilos is matching Gable Stevenson's speed?
No.
Right.
I mean that 100%. Like, and if you know, like, I was 100% against Gable before this. Like, I remember I once said this man would never win a national title.
What the fuck were you on? Huh? Dude, what?
He was an asshole. People started to hate him for that, right? And he still is. You're not going to deny that. But, like, the villain persona fits him more than anything.
I don't even think it's a villain at this point. I think it's just he's so good and people can't stand it.
Yeah. That's 100%. Physical dominance-wise, like, obviously, if you want to watch Spencer Lee, that's not – you know, let's be honest. He's not too fun of a wrestler to watch because he just turns people on top. Seeing a guy get
he's
manhandled –
an excellent wrestler to watch.
He is an excellent wrestler to watch if you want it from a technical standpoint, right? Like, yeah. I obviously go watch his stuff. There's no way I'm wrapping around a 285 dude with a fucking Gable bar and turning him, like, 5 times. But there's obviously things I can work on. Like, Gable does stuff that you can break down very well. And the main difference between Gable back in 2019 and Gable now is his ability to chain wrestle.
Gable might just prove me wrong on, like, something that I was talking about, like, before we started recording, saying that, like, pretty much our most, like, elite guys, like, the top of the top, they pick their shots, mm-hmm. right? People complain about, like, Dayton Fix and Nick Suriano and occasionally, like, Jaden Cox even, right? These guys that maybe shoot 2-3 times mm-hmm. a match ever. Maybe even like only one or two, but those are our top guys for a reason. Yeah. Because whenever the more you shoot, the more you could possibly, you know, get defended and stuffed and scored on. And especially in freestyle, which obviously, whenever we want to talk about our top guys, it has to be in freestyle just because that's who we send to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Gable might prove me wrong on that. I'm not going to lie. Just because he's so high percentage every single time he gets onto a leg. I was Mike Mal breakdown that he did of his Big Ten
but
final.
I think with that Paris. Is, again, my main thing I want to get into. You look at those. Remember, if you go back to freshman year, Gable, if he shoots under a guy, there were times he got stuffed. Obviously, it happens. He would just chill there. Now he hits because he was in both knees on shots. Because you so you just realize these guys don't get scored on throughout their entire high school career. You know, that's why a lot of them suck at bottom. These aren't average heavyweights going to D1 level competing like that.
Yeah.
Like people are coming at Kirk, like if you all American as a freshman at heavyweight, that's insane. You know? Getting off bottom, you know, you have to assume that would have been his downfall, if anything. He's good enough on his feet. He's good enough on top. And he's technically more sound than technically the second most sound heavyweight out there, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with that. But if my process behind this is if Gable can blank Nick Gwizdowski 2-0, two matches to none in the Olympic trials, he is my pick to win gold. And I mean tech.
Oh.
I mean tech, yeah.
I mean, shit. I mean.
If he does that, he is my pick to be Kyle Gorgino Petrushvili. His downfall, his downfall will be an upper body move.
Here's my biggest thing. Just because it's a general trend in USA wrestling. I agree with your scenario where if it's a two-match shutout, Andy techs him, but it also has to be takedowns because I just don't see – I don't know what
Gable's not a turn, dude.
Yeah, exactly. But he talks a lot about his transition to either double-leg gut wrench or single-leg leg lace, which obviously it's an excellent transition, and you should be able to score off of your own transition. But there's just something about, like, the minds over – like, in other countries regarding parterre that – they just have something figured out that we don't, right? And I think one of them is I saw
freestyle their entire lives.
Yeah, but it's just something about they turn different because a Russian gut-wrenching someone is way less of a fight than an American gut-wrenching someone. And I think it's because we try to, like, muscle it because I've said it before.
They're American also just much stronger than us. Like, you know how strong kind of – you know how strong
bodybuilders, right? Powerlifters, and wrestlers at the same time, they're just wrestlers, right?
Yeah.
Like, I've seen it. Sajulayev doesn't really touch a barbell very often. Like, if you look at training footage, that's how you judge. It's mostly bands and occasionally kettlebells.
But what you have to realize is they don't show you everything.
They don't show you everything.
They show you what they want to show you.
Yeah, I'm also judging off of, like, Kerry Kolot talking about, like, training experiences and stuff.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just fucking – I watched a Dan Dennis video on gut wrenches, which in terms of, like, a dude with, like, pretty good parterre offense for an American, Dan Dennis is a good example.
Yeah.
And then I look at Abdulrashid Sajulayev, who obviously best gut wrench on the goddamn planet, right? And obviously Lopez. I have also had other really excellent on freestyle coaches from the freestyle gut wrench.
Okay, I was about to say, like, you can look at freestyle gut wrenches all you want, but Sajulayev's gut wrench is nothing compared when you throw it to Lopez. The Greco. Yeah. No, but, like, even most – I'm pretty sure most Greco Olympic medalists have a better gut wrench than Sajulayev. And that's just to be expected.
Yeah, because it happens.
That's the only turn. It's there. And what's that, the Robbie Smith, like, head pinch?
Yeah.
Oh, you've never seen the head pinch, dude? Oh, my God. Kind of like a gator. It was like he has a head locked up like this, and he puts his knee in the armpit and, like, pinches it.
Oh, I love that turn.
But you also have to realize, when Robbie Smith was, like, in his prime, you probably weren't even wrestling yet. Like, 2014, 2015? How long have you been wrestling?
Oh, fuck no, I wasn't wrestling yet. Exactly. Oh, wait, no, I just started.
Yeah, like, you weren't big into wrestling then. I remember one of the first matches I watched was Adam Kuhn versus Robbie Smith at the Olympic trials, where Robbie Smith hit him with the arm spin twice, actually. Beat him 7-2.
I love that, bro, so much.
He was so good. He's the thing that shows that technique can win you matches in Greco, and it's not solely based on size.
Yeah.
Who was the stronger, more athletic athlete on that day? Adam Kuhn.
Adam.
Who's the better wrestler on that day? Robbie Smith. You know?
Robbie Smith.
And that just goes to show that the technique...
Our spins are a fundamental technique.
That that technique only gets you so far without strength and size. Lopez is by no means the most technical Greco wrestler out there. But he's one of the greatest.
His gut wrench is a thing of beauty.
Yeah. But why is it a thing of beauty? Who has more technical gut wrench? Sagulayev or Lopez? Sagulayev.
Lopez, just has actually.
Maybe, but like you have to realize, look at what Lopez looks like.
Yeah.
Tell me it's not even a little bit easier to turn somebody when you're built like that.
It's whenever you're turning someone else who weighs as much as you. So Abdulrashid Sagulayev. So this is why I talk about there's a freestyle and then there's a Greco weighted gun. Yeah.
There's right? a difference.
Because with freestyle, you also have to worry about like step overs.
Yeah.
And Dayton Fix uses his gut to get a leg in and then start doing other turns. Mm-hmm. So Sagulayev steps in at the hip, right? And sometimes he'll cover the hip with his foot, and then that's what allows him to pop his hips in and under. If you watch how Sagulayev gut wrenches, he actually doesn't even bridge half the time because he doesn't have to. That's like the more masterful way to gut wrench, because whenever you do that, you pull your opponent into your hips. And this is why freestyle skills are valuable for folk style as well, because just like whenever you're tilting, if you pull his hips into yours, you're in control. So yeah. Neon Lopez, because he's in a Greco rule set, if he steps in like that, he could risk a leg foul, right? So he just has to keep him tight to his chest, and then he'll go one way, go the other, or he'll go trap arm, and then he has to pop and bridge. So in terms of that pop and bridge,
and he doesn't even do that. Because, again, they give you, like, the room. So where, you know, when you're rolling over your back, you can roll over flat over your back when you're gut wrenching somebody.
Yeah, you can, but you're not going to get the turn as well.
Yeah, no, obviously that being said. But if you ever go watch him, there's nobody in the world that's his size. The fact that Adam Kuhn is out here cutting from, like, 310, 315 – and is towered over by Mian Lopez says something.
Yeah.
Like, it's at the end of the day, the man looks like he's not even trying in most of his matches.
Kuhn or Lopez?
Lopez.
Yeah.
Like, he just chills from neutral. It's like when you go on bottom, it's like, shit. I remember he took down Robbie Smith, snapped his face through the earth with one hand. Spun behind and just gut wrenched him, like, you know. And it's
that's how good you should try to develop one technique. Just I mean, make that's it so the that only technique. You're not even trying.
Yeah, it's like that, but he didn't. It's like the physical dominance factor is what's kept him at the top for so long.
Yeah. All right. So coming all that, the way back.
Yeah. No, we went completely off topic. But even with Kirkfleet, we're supposed to be talking about NCAA seedings right now.
And now we're talking about freestyle.
But where does Kirkfleet fall in the seedings? Around like 12, I think?
Yeah.
What match could that set up in the round of 16? Let me know. Mason Paris.
Fuck.
Mason Paris doesn't have the best track record as 5 seed. You saw somebody get inside Mason Paris's head. Never seen that before.
Yeah.
That's what needs to be said. Dude, like, a lot of people just coming at the man on Instagram and Twitter. I was like, what the fuck did you want him to do? Like, he didn't do anything wrong there. He was talking on Twitter. Okay, Gable does that all the time, too. Again, Mason Paris is not...
Mason Paris, at least to my knowledge, he's not much of a talker anyway.
He's not.
Yeah, he was just building up the match that... frankly, didn't really need much more build-up, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, no, obviously, I thought I had Gable winning 10-7. I thought Mason Paris getting a takedown was inevitable, as I said before, but this just goes to show that, like, damn. No, nothing.
He kind of,
like, Mason Paris
that
kind
of killed
dunk.
The hype of the match, to be honest, because now that's pretty definitive. I mean, Stencil. It's wrestling, and you never know, like, what Paris is going to be able to do in a week. Is it this weekend, Nationals? Yeah.
Because you have to think, who's making, after Gable talked that much, I don't see him losing. He knows he can take it to him. When it gets to the point that you're flexing on a guy mid-match, when have you seen anybody do that before? Maybe. I don't think I ever have. Never, no. Let's be honest, no. And is it ever going to happen again? Probably not. Probably Gable.
Gable's big on the theatrics.
It's like, I've been saying before, if there's one guy that Gable cannot score bonus points on, it's Matt Stenzel. And he's the only one that Gable hasn't wrestled yet out of the top guys in the country. Colton Schultz, fair. Possibly, but Gable's proven to be able to exploit Colton Schultz's athleticism in his defense by just going outside low singles.
Yeah.
That's how you beat him, right?
Yep.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if Colton Schultz places that high. I'll say right now, I don't like Gannon Gremmel being the four seed. I don't think anybody does, except for him. let's be completely honest there. Ethan Laird, I don't like that, but that's going to have to boot Jordan Woods higher. I think Jordan Woods, a guy who's getting extremely technically sound. I think I would put him over Ethan Laird, but because he's a fourth-place All-American, right?
Yeah, right.
Who are the actual returning All-Americans, like the real All-Americans? Gable Steveson plays third. Jordan Wood plays fourth. Matt Stenzel plays seventh, and Trent Hoger plays eighth. Those are the only guys that actually All-American. You know, and Gable's the one seed. Stenzel's the two seed as it stands. Jordan was the eight seed. That just brought six guys just moved into the mix. And Trent Hoger's around 15.
Right.
Which just makes it insanely stupid. Because Trent Hoger's been so close to being Matt Stenzel every time. If they match up in the round of 16, that's just terrible. It's just like, how would you even go about that? But I do want to talk about how would I seed this weight class. Now, Gable won, right? That just has to be said. Yep. He's the one. He's proved it right now. 16-2 career record.
Yep.
I don't think there's a possibility that he ever loses again unless carefully it hits a glow up, hits a Mason Paris glow up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's very possible Penn State that those are the next two national finals after this, if Gable stays.
Yeah.
Gable versus Carefully.
Yes.
Two seed, Mason Paris, has to be said. Three seed, I'll take Matt Stenzel from Central Michigan. Four seed, I'll take Tony Cassiope. Five seed, I'll take Colton Schultz. Six seed, I'll take Greg Kerfoot. Seven seed, who's left from the Big Ten? Christian Lance is next, right?
Yeah.
Seven seed, I would take Jordan Wood. Eight seed, I'll take Christian Lance. Nine seed, I think Hilger gets criteria over Orndorff, so I'll take Hilger. Then Orndorff 10, Luffman 11.
Yeah.
Then Laird 12 from Ryder.
Yep.
Gannon Gremmel 13. Carter Isley 14. Bobby Heald from Army 15. And that's really their all is to say there, really. Like I think Heald needs to be Brian Andrews 15, then Heald 16.
Yeah.
And then Zach Elam may even drop to Zach Elam has to go in the mix. Maybe I throw him at like 12, 13.
Yeah.
That's a whole blood round freshman. Like, and he just gets thrown to the side there, honestly. That's really what that is.
Yeah.
That's kind of insane to think about.
Yeah.
Overall, though, like, how would you even see this weight class in the first place? Like, I know they're all coming at Flo, whoever's trying to talk about this, but like, there's no real correct way to seed this after one and two.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess.
And that's just without being said, just because of the whole all in conference. Like, what do you want to say? Like that's kind of thing. But that being said, though, like, I think that's really it. Like, to be honest, I don't think there's anything else to talk about. Yeah. Any last words or?
No, not really.
All right. So, that being said, thank you guys for watching. This has been episode 57 of Late Night Shots. Technically, we're going to be filming this today, but it'll be dropping tomorrow. We're going to be talking about Big 12 a little bit and how they're fair in nationals. So that being said, thank you for watching Late Night Shots podcast, and we'll see you guys again next time.
Peace.